Welcome to the podcast series from the National Centre for Research Methods at the University of Southampton. In today's podcast, Dr. Andy Hudson-Smith from University College London talks about crowdsourcing, what it is, how it works, and how it could transform the face of academic funding.
The interesting thing is that I've just sat down, I sort of got out my notes, and I thought, right, so what is crowdsourcing? And the interest, you sort of naturally go to Wikipedia first, which is a natural crowdsource site, and just sort of to see where the term came from. Now, Wikipedia said the term comes from 2005, whereas the clip that I use in my talk actually says crowdsourcing came from Jeff Howe in a Wired article in 2006. I think that almost sums up the joys of what crowdsourcing is. You get all of these people in, you gather all the facts, you use the crowd, you use not just one person, but hundreds of thousands of people. And if you get all these people in, then not all of the facts are correct. So I'm almost not sure now what crowdsourcing is, or whether it was 2006 or 2005.
Well, that's interesting. I guess that's the nature of it, isn't it? It's something that's evolving as an idea, as a concept, perhaps.
It is, yeah. But it is something, even though it's Jeff Howe, Wired, I'm going to go for 2005. It's just been about since the dawn of sort of mankind, where we just ask people to help. And that's arguably all crowdsourcing is. So I am quite interested that the term didn't come across till 2005, because if you look back, it has been around since perhaps John Harrison's clock, that was 1714, where the call went out to help from a navigation point of view. And that was sort of a crowdsourced call. So there's things that we want to do, but we can't do, so we ask the crowd.
So it's an idea, if you like, that's perhaps based deep in history, but we've just put a name on it.
Yes. And I think it's become useful because we can reach the crowd now. So it's always been out there, but to reach the crowd before, we had to use newspapers, radio, traditional broadcast. And when the web came along, you could reach the crowd, but they couldn't really write back. And then the whole Web 2 came along, where you can reach the crowd and then they can write back. So Web 2 is read-write. I think that's when crowdsourcing actually took off.
Just tell me a little bit about why it is that researchers like you are interested in it, and how you can use it, how it's of interest and how it's of use.
It's a way to get impact and to get your work used. So it's a way to put your work out there and say, look, this is what I'm trying to do. I need some help. But it's also a way to solve things that haven't been solved before, or to change things that perhaps big companies do, local councils, local government do, and to change things for the better of the crowd. I guess one key example would be OpenStreetMap's work, where that came from someone who just sat down and saw how mapping worked, and it was tied up in legal agreements and people were suing this person and large companies ruled the waves, let's say. And they just sat down and said, what if we allow everyone just to sort of draw a line on a map outside their houses, or to perhaps log a cycle ride with a GPS unit? And then we can sort of build up perhaps a global map. And everyone sort of sat down and sort of almost laughed. There were academic talks kicking about where they sort of called them boys on bikes. And yet these boys on bikes have now mapped almost the entire world in an open source, crowdsourced way. And the whole OpenStreetMap movement has almost utilized the entire power of the crowd to put something online that everyone can use.
That's a fantastic example of its possibilities. What about the sorts of things that you've been doing then, Andy? How have you been using this? I don't know whether the right word is technique, or how have you been using crowdsourcing in your work?
We've been using it from a toolkit point of view and also a survey point of view. So we're keen to obviously get the work out there. We're keen to put new research methods out there that the crowd can use. So you don't have to be a high-end PhD-trained user to gather sort of social network data. So we're putting toolkits out there. And arguably, once you put the toolkits out there, because the crowd use them, the crowd will mine these social networks that almost all come back to our mothership, which allows us to sort of, I guess, crowd mine. There's a lot of terms around the crowdsourcing. So there's the rather worrying term, which is cloud labor, which is where you're using the crowd almost as a free labor source. But lots of companies actually do that. And that's how these small companies can very rapidly become big, because the crowd is arguably their labor force.
Now, you were also actually asked to do a little bit of crowdsourcing on behalf of Radio 4, weren't you? Tell us a bit about that.
We wanted to ask people their views on the credit crunch at that point. And this came across mainly because Radio 4 rang us up and said, there's this credit crunch which is beginning to sort of build. We'd like to sort of put something on Radio 4 that asks people their views, and we're not really sure how. And it's one of those things as an academic lab that if someone like Radio 4 rings up, you'll obviously say yes. And then you put the phone down and think, oh, well, we actually don't know how to actually make this work. But went back to the research team here and said, look, so Radio 4 want to do a crowdsourced survey. This is good. The word crowdsourcing had only just come up. And we want to map it in real time of what people's thoughts are. And there's all of these surveys out there, but you don't really get geographic location, let alone a real-time feed. So we put something online, which allowed Radio 4 to ask people their views and ask for their postcode at the same time. And this was broadcast on Radio 4. And we got about 24,000 inputs within about 1 hour. And that suddenly made us sit back and think, wow. So from a research lab point of view, you can put work out there, but it is very niche. We sort of work in our very niche worlds. And maybe, I know, if things go really well, 100 people may answer it. But if you can build a crowdsourced toolkit and use the traditional media outreach at the same time, you can get hundreds of thousands of people to actually help out with your research.
Is it this might sound a bit mean. Is it a glorified word for survey then, crowdsourcing?
it's probably a glorified word for survey, for labour, for funding, for creativity, for knowledge. It's just opening all of your thought patterns up and putting them into the crowd and seeing what the crowd thinks.
Where do you think it's going to go from here? I mean, it's still a relatively, well, not massively new concept, but a relatively new one. And how would you like to see it going forward and researchers making use of it particularly?
From a researcher's point of view, it's sort of taking quite an interesting shift. So we're used to sort of writing the 8-10 page research grants, arguably a sort of a 1 in 8 chance of those research grants coming in, waiting 6 months. And you can do the crowdfunding route now. So you could do a web page and a YouTube style pitch, and you could ask the crowd to fund your research. And that's an interesting shift. It's a shift that hasn't quite reached the academic world yet. It's sort of reached the hardware, creativity, arts world, but it's beginning to, you can just see it on the edge of moving into academic funding.
So what in your view then, Andy, are the advantages of that over the current system?
Yes, I love it. I love the fact that you can ask the crowd and the crowd could either pitch in £5, £10 or £100, but those little pounds add up. And it is getting your work reviewed by the crowd. So if your work is not worthy, it will not attract funds. But at least you're reviewed by the entire crowd rather than just maybe 4 or 5 academics. And the numbers are quite big. Some of the crowdfunding hardware sites, they could raise £10 million in a week. These are the sort of numbers you can get. And it's some of the hardware which is coming out of it actually builds directly into our research now. So we arguably don't look for the research trends via the big companies now, the Intels, the Microsofts of this world. We go to the Kickstarters and we fund new hardware firms.
But there are clearly risks, aren't there, as well, Andy, particularly, I imagine, to an academic.
It almost looks as if you can't get funding from the traditional peer review route, and therefore you have to sort of do a YouTube movie and sort of cap in hand, which is not what academia should be. But there's something about being able to fund that spark, and maybe the crowd will fund that spark more than the more traditional calls.
Now, this whole idea of crowdfunding is something you're going to be talking about at the ESRC Research Methods Festival next week. Tell us a bit more then about what you're going to be saying to academics about it.
From a academic point of view, that raises various academic questions, ethics, ref, the whole range. And therefore, I'm a great believer that if you're giving a talk, you should allow people to sort of get a little bit riled halfway through and to ask those awkward questions, and then that at least raises them. So I will be going for the slightly riled academic feedback.
What about the non-academic, Andy, the wider public? We've talked about them as being providers of labour, of information, even of money. But what are the benefits for them?
The crowdsourcing and the crowdfunding is dramatically shifting the way new hardware comes into the world. And this is changing the way society will arguably interact in just sort of 18 months, 2 years' time. One of the things we, Queen, have invested funding in ourselves was the Oculus Rift. The Oculus Rift is a virtual reality headset, which was completely funded by the crowd. And that's gone from nothing to almost marketplace in 2 years. And it's not from the big companies, but it's going to change the way society interacts with the world around them. And the route to market has become very short. And the route to market can come from anyone. And I'm quite interested in how people who are not on the economic ladder currently can get on that ladder via just sort of crowdsourced type sites, or even sites sort of like Etsy, where people can just sit at home and they can make their own craftware and they can sort of open a shop with ease. But it's a shop that faces the entire crowd. And it is a joy, I think, to see how the small companies, the community groups, can sort of compete on a level playing field with all the big, slightly lumbering large firms.
Dr. Andy Hudson-Smith will be talking at the ESRC Research Methods Festival in July. You can find out more on the NCRM website at www.ncrm.ac.uk.